The first one that is discussed in Lesson 20 is on the eldership. And then next week, Lord willing, we'll have a lesson on the deacons. And then not the following week, because that is the week of our gospel meeting, but the week after that, we'll talk about the role of evangelists. And that was put in this section on the organization of the local church, and we already talked about that. And I feel that lesson best placed elsewhere. But as we think about the eldership, we don't have to kind of grope in the dark as to what God would have us to be doing. We don't have to wonder, well, how would God have us to be organized? And within these roles that are clearly set forth in the Bible, we are not without answer as to the qualifications of the individuals that have these particular duties or these offices. And we're not in the dark as it relates to what their job is and what they were to be doing, their duty and their obligation, and what our obligation to them is. So that's what this lesson, Lesson 20 of your book, is designed to cover. And if you want to add some things to this, you feel more than welcome to do that. If you feel like there's something that needs to be said that the book didn't cover, then you go ahead and bring that up. The first thing that is discussed in your book is that of the office, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and then verse 1. Someone read that for us. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and then verse 1.
This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work.
And so some versions may say office, some may say position. I don't know about you, but I like to compare different versions when I'm studying a particular passage, or maybe I'm reading a chapter or a section of the Bible, and I run into a lot of words that are archaic words, words that we just don't use today. And so that's when it does us good to do a comparison with some other versions. The King James Version uses the word office. The New King James Version uses the word position as the version. What version are you reading from? Same New King James Version? And so you may be using a different version. And how is it rendered in some of the versions that you're using?
Position.
Overseer. Overseer. And what version is? Are you using, Cheryl?
The Open Bible.
Okay, the Open Bible. And what about you, Blaine?
New King James. I'm going by the note there. It says literally overseer.
Okay, so maybe it's rendered position in the verse, but then there's a marginal rendering of that word. But we see that the Bible uses that term, the office, the position of a bishop. There is only a handful of references, a handful of places in the New Testament that really you read about the elders, whether it's their qualifications or their work, their oversight. What I appreciate about that is because with such few verses about it, such few passages about it, it helps me get my mind better wrapped around what the Bible says about it. Because when you run into a topic where there's just 200 references just tons of references as to that topic, it's more difficult, really, to get your mind wrapped around it because the enormity of the references. But that's really not the case with the elders, the deacons, and so forth, and some of the other roles that we'll look at with the evangelists and so forth. And so, first off, he talks about the uses of the word elder. Originally, the authority seems naturally invested in those who, by virtue of greater age. And typically when we think of elder, that's what our mind tends to go to. Someone who is older, someone who is mature, someone who is elderly. You see within that elderly. And that's typically where our mind goes, and consequently experience. We're best suited to govern. Well, why would that be the case? Why originally would the concept be that someone who is an elder be in a better position or better suited to govern? What's he pointing out here? Okay, now they've been around, seen a few things, right? Blaine?
Yeah, the boy mature as a Christian also.
Okay, maturity. Points out here about experience. And certainly that falls within the qualifications, as we'll look at in just a moment, about an individual who would qualify to be an elder. Later, the idea of age became merged with that of dignity and experience. You can take someone who has the years, but some of these other qualifications not met, right? Just because I might be older, I say years to come, maybe older doesn't mean that I have experience necessarily. Dignity doesn't mean that I'm suited to govern. And so when you look at the work, and I really appreciate the sermons that I hear on the eldership when the qualifications are not the starting place, when it's kind of switched around and individuals will first begin to talk about the duties, the experience, before they talk about the qualifications, because the duties that they have, the responsibilities, is what demands the qualifications. And so I like to address it from that angle, to talk about the duties before I talk about the qualifications. In Luke 15 and Mark 8, the word is used as an adjective to denote seniority. Tell me what an adjective is. Now, I'm no English teacher. Don't claim to be. But I'll tell you something, that it is very beneficial when you're studying the Bible to take notice of these parts of speech that you run into, whether it's a noun or a verb or an adverb or an adjective. That helps us to get a better idea of the way that word is being used. So what's an adjective? Okay, yeah, so it describes a noun. It qualifies that noun, right? A noun being a person, place, or thing, proper person, place, or thing. And so you may be talking about a man, which would be a noun, but then this qualifies it if you have an adjective. What type of person is that? Right? Or a verb, action, and an adverb. Well, you might have an action of running, but then an adverb of quickly running. That modifies or qualifies, describes, makes more clear that word that is being used. And just a quick yes or no, because time gets away, would you benefit from having a chart that has the various parts of speech on it? If you do, I have one. I'll run copies of it and bring it next week, Lord willing. Talks about what nouns, verbs are, adjectives, and adverbs. I'll bring some copies, put them in the back, and if you want it, you can pick that up. Refers to Jewish elders in the synagogue. And so you have these references where it talks about just simply seniority in the first instance of Luke 15. What was the context of that? What took place in Luke 15? Yeah, the prodigal son. And then when the younger son came home, who was upset about it? The older son, the elder son. And so that just simply means that he was older, seniority-wise, been living longer, referring to Jewish elders of the synagogue. And here's the references that spill that out. And so they were men who were mature. I mean that they were right, but it's used in that way. The elder among the people. Denote certain persons appointed in local churches to exercise spiritual oversight over its members. And this is the crux of our study, because we're not dealing with someone who's just necessarily seniority. We're not dealing with someone who is just simply older in age and that's it. There's a lot of other things that come along with that. This is what we're talking about. Individuals who are appointed in local churches to exercise spiritual oversight over its members. And so that's what we're interested in studying about tonight. Acts 14, verse 23. What does that reference say? This was soon after the beginning of the missionary journeys.
So when they had appointed elders in every church and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed.
Yeah. And so they had appointed these particular men to do what? To oversee that particular congregation. Acts chapter 20 and then verse 17. Paul was at the little city of Miletus. And he called for who? The elders of the church at Ephesus. And began to talk with them about their duty, about their role. Take heed therefore unto yourselves, into the flock over the which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers. And so again, that's our study tonight with reference to elders in the local church. And then Titus chapter 1 verse 5. What does that reference say?
For this reason I let you increase, that you should set in order the things that are lacking, and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you.
And so there we have the uses of those words. And I understand that you could just park alongside the road, as it were, and just spend a quarter looking at everything that you could glean from the passages that we've just now read out loud. I understand that. But we certainly don't have time in this study to do that. But elder in the last sense is used synonymously with some other words of the New Testament. What words are they? It's in your book and on the screen. Bishop and pastor, referring to the same office or position or work. Ephesians chapter 4 and then verse 11. He gave some apostles, pastors, teachers, evangelists, and so forth. I don't know how many times that individuals refer to me as a pastor. So you're pastoring that church at Mill Street. No, not pastoring that church at Mill Street. I'm just a preacher there, one of the preachers. Not an elder, not a pastor, not a bishop. Just a Christian who so happens to preach. But often, because of the world's distortion about what that word really is, I think the majority of the religious people in the denominational world have no concept of how the Bible uses this word. Just no concept whatsoever. And the reason is not because they don't have access to it, and they use the Bible that we use, but they have just been under this system of a pastoral system for so long that they just assume that that's the way it is. And so our pastor's the preacher, our preacher's the pastor. And they have no concept of elders, a plurality of men, and what that work is entails. And he called to him the elders of the church, as we talked about a moment ago. Take heed unto yourselves and to all the flock in the which the Holy Spirit hath made you bishops to feed or pastor the church. That word pastor has the idea of tending to, taking care of. Acts 20, 17 and 28. For this cause I left thee in Crete. Why, Paul? Why did you leave Titus in Crete? Thou should have set in order and appoint or ordain elders in every city as I appointed thee. For the bishop must be blameless as the stewards of God. Titus 1, 5 through 7. Any thoughts about that so far? It's in a nutshell the use of the word elder, bishop, pastor. Just to get your mind wrapped around how the word is used in the Bible. Okay, so we understand that there was men that was to be appointed in how many churches? Yeah, every one of them, right? Each one. I bring your mind back to those two passages of Titus chapter 1 verse 5 and Acts 14 verse 23, because in one passage it says ordain or appoint elders in every church. Then the other one says city. And again, how do you harmonize that? That's right. There was a congregation, a church meeting in each city, and they were to appoint elders in every single one of them. That doesn't mean one church in a particular city had elders that had the oversight of a plurality of flocks or churches. That's not what he's talking about. And so we know that men were to be appointed into those positions, ordained, set in those positions. Well, so we need to consider what the responsibility and the work of an elder is. When you think about the work of an elder, again, it helps us to understand why the qualifications, why he was to do what he was supposed to have done in his home, right? Because he has this responsibility relative to the work in the local church. Acts 20, verse 28. To feed the church of God. Elders are flock feeders, right? One of the qualifications is that they are to be apt to teach. Able to teach. Well, why is that important? Yeah, they need to know this book so that they can impart this knowledge to others. Right? When you look at the other things, that example setters and so forth, oversee and kind of guard against error, they need to know this, what this book teaches. Acts 20, verse 28. And so they're flock feeders. Guard the flock from false teachers. Paul also addressed that in Acts 20, verses 29 through 31, when he said, "For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in," right? "Enter in the flock, not sparing the flock, even of your own selves." Now, when Paul says, "even among your own selves," what is he directly talking about? Okay. Yeah, the eldership, even among yourselves. "Shall perverse men enter in, not sparing the flock." And so he admonishes them, tells them the importance of making sure that they are taking the oversight to themselves and to the flock. And then he says, "By the space of three years, I cease not to what? Warn everyone night and day with tears." You think that's a role of an evangelist, to warn consistently or persistently? Night and day, as it were. To be on the guard concerning false teachers. And so the elders have the responsibility to guard the flock from false teachers. And so you have elders at a particular group, and a preacher gets up and he preaches that which he ought not preach. You think they ought to address that? Everyone says yes, right? Yeah, that's right. That can be addressed in a number of ways, depending on the situation. It needs to be corrected, but how might that be addressed? Depending on the situation. Okay. Private and public. How would you know the difference? You think it would take wisdom to discern the difference? Yeah, you have to have wisdom to know how to handle a particular situation. That comes with experience, right? Give me an example of where that might be taken care of privately. Maybe both. Correct it publicly, but... Okay. Suppose you're dealing with an individual who makes an honest mistake about what he said. Wasn't malicious about... Consequences can be the same nonetheless, but wasn't malicious about it. Just made a mistake about what he was doing. He made a mistake and didn't know what he should have known about it, but got up to preach about it, and therefore made a mistake. So the elders would take care of that. Hey, listen, I want to suggest this study for you. I want to sit down with you and study about this. That doesn't mean that it's left unnoticed from the pulpit. They need to make correction about that. Whether he gets up and makes correction about it, this is what I said, but in light of what I've been taught since then, this is what the Bible says about it. when they get up and make correction about it. The point that I want you to see is that they have the oversight of that to guard the congregation against false teaching or that which is contrary to sound doctrine. Any other thoughts about that? You agree with that? We're on the same page with that? And it may be a situation where someone ought to know better, but they didn't, and then publicly that's dealt with. Can you find an example in the Bible where something was dealt with publicly? I know you know.
Peter
and his hypocrisy in Galatians chapter, is it chapter 3? Remember how he was rebuked? Paul said, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. When Paul was writing to Timothy, he named at least two men who had overthrown the faith of some because they were teaching that the resurrection was past already. We just recently dealt with that on our sermon, What People Mock. Hymenaeus and Philetus, remember that? Alexander the coppersmith. Diotrephes. We live in a world today where folks just absolutely, many times, are against name-calling whatsoever. And I'm not saying be malicious about it, but there are times when it is appropriate. And ruling the church. Romans chapter 12, verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 17. Do elders rule the flock? Sure they do. There's a responsibility given to them. Read for us Romans chapter 12, verse 8.
He who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness.
And then 1 Timothy 5, 17.
Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine.
Yeah. Those that have the rule, right? Not as lords, but as examples. Now, some of your versions may not use the word lords. But in this reference of 1 Peter 5, 3, what does he say? Neither as being
lords
over God's heritage, but, here's the contrast, being examples. And we've covered this in the past. But what does that mean? What's the contrast? What does it mean to be a lord over God's heritage? Well,
what's the rule over them, but not like that? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You've seen this motion, right? It's not a dictatorship. It's an eldership. What's the difference? Not a tyrant. Yeah, an overseer, but by examples leading the flock. Here's what we need to do. Let me show you the way. Not here's what we need to do. Do as I say. That's the difference between that. So not as lords, but as examples. You have a right to ask questions? Sure you have a right to ask questions. You have a right to ask elders and deacons questions just as much as you have a right to ask your preacher questions. Right? Still just covered that in the Bible class about questions and so forth. Our attitude when individuals ask questions. Watching in behalf of souls, Hebrews 13, verse 17. For they watch, right? Obey them that have the rule over you and submit unto them, for they what? Yeah, they're soul watchers. So they're example setters, they're flock feeders, they're soul watchers. Talk about a blessing to have individuals watching over your soul, watching out for you. Maybe you can see some things coming down the pike that we, because of inexperience, just don't see. And can point that out. The qualifications of elders. Time goes quick. Make this correction in your book. If you were looking for 1 Timothy chapter 8, You might have a difficult time finding it. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 2 through 7 talks about the qualifications of elders. Without reproach, husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, orderly, given to hospitality, apt to teach, no brawler, no striker, gentle, not contentious, or argumentative, no lover of money, ruling well his own household, not an office, of good reputation without. And again, this is where it does good to do a comparison in another version of the Bible. The New King James Version, not a bishop then must be blameless, husband, one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in subjection with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony. King James Version says report among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. When you think about the work that he has to do, again, it helps us to understand why these qualifications are given. Are these optional? Well, I want to be an elder, but some of these I don't have, and now I've got the majority of them, and I've got a desire later on in life to obtain some of these other ones. And you know, we need to have elders, so who's in it with me? Would that work? No. Must, again, well, perhaps the strongest word in the English language. And these are not unrealistic. Congregations exist probably for years. I know several, for years and years and years and generations and generations and generations, and never had elders. Is it because it's unrealistic? God has just expected too much? No, it's because why? No, it may be more than one reason, but okay. Yeah. Lack of desire, lack of teaching. Is that what you said? A lack of preparation. How many young men aspire to be elders? Huh? And I don't know if, and I tell you, time goes too quick, but I just want to say, I don't know if we really make that any easier. Right? Could it be the case that we've behaved in such a way that there's just no one in their right mind, as it were, that would desire that because of the way, perhaps, that we act?
Hebrews 13:7, the rest of that verse says, submit yourselves, for they want to be your souls, as they must give an account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief. We can cause them to have grief.
That's right. And so a lot of reasons, but I want to point out that it's attainable. It's a must, but it's attainable too. And without them, we are what? Titus 1:5 said, in order the things that are lacking. Well, that doesn't mean just to go ahead and do it regardless of, and throw the qualifications out the window and just check off, well, we have them. But we need to make sure that men are qualified to do that, but we need to work toward that. And that's not easy. I know that. All of you know that that's not easy. But I'm telling you, you're sitting in a position at Mill Street where you have an advantage that a lot of congregations do not have. You've got men with families who can obtain these qualifications. My question is, are we going to help them do that through teaching, proper preparation, encouragement, and so forth?
There'll be a time to discourage the young doctor. planning council.
Okay. I'm not going to put myself through that. Right? Any other thoughts about that? We do not have time in this study to just pull off beside the road and look at every single word. I think it'd be worthwhile to do that. And we have done that in other studies, but I encourage you to continue to look at that and understand that these are qualifications that they must have, that they need to be encouraged to obtain, and is within reach. Any thoughts, questions, comments about that?
John,
yes.
You can't just have one else.
That's correct. It's always spoken of as a plurality, whether it's Acts chapter 20, 1 Peter 5, and 1 Timothy chapter 3, Titus 1. It's always in a plurality. Right? Titus 1, 6 through 9, blameless husband of one wife. And I understand there's questions that come up. Well, what does this mean? What does that mean? And that's okay. It's okay to ask a question. I don't think there's much difficult about the text. I think people ask a lot of hypotheticals sometimes, of which just you really don't even need to deal with. But nothing difficult about what he says. It's a man that excludes a woman. He's married, that excludes someone single, right? He's temperate, self-controlled, sober-minded, vigilant, watchful, given to hospitality, opens his home up, shares what he has, able to exhort, encourage, and convict the gainsayer, no brawler, not argumentative, contentious, and so forth, no striker, not soon angry, not self-willed, not greedy, a filthy lucre, having children that believe, who are not accused of right or unruly. Why would that matter? To have children? Well, yeah, that would eliminate someone who has no children, right? Fatherless, and on and on. We're going to, because of time, we're going to have to stop right there. And if it's okay with you, instead of moving on to the next lesson next week, we'll just pick it up right there, finish this lesson. Maybe that might afford some more time to look closer at these before we move on to lesson 21. I appreciate your good attention.